begin the recording now, actually. So let's get back to where we were. I'll do my screen share again. And hopefully we get to stay together. I hope that works. So essentially, to make a long story short, he argues as follows. The Torah puts man above the rest of nature. It says everything is for you, mankind. We get to do what we need with the world to suit our own interests. And because of that, humans have now married science to technology to make all sorts of advances which are getting out of control and ruining the world. And it's all the Torah's fault. That is his claim. And so my question to you before we go on is, what would you respond to this claim? Number one, is he reading Bereshit correctly? Is he right in saying that it's explicit in the creation story that everything in the world is simply for man's benefit and rule? And number two, if he is right, does that mean the Torah can be blamed for pollution and ecological decay and the like? Yes, Paul.
I disagree. I disagree with him.
Okay, Chaim, yeah. Over it.
If you ask the people of Nicaragua or Honduras on the last few days, they would say that the hurricane that killed people and destroyed their property was not for the benefit of mankind.
So some parts of nature are not for the benefit of mankind. That's the argument.
I think that he's. I think that it's a very weak. It's a very weak argument. Extremely weak because number one, I think that Western Bible-based societies have fared much better than godless societies such as Soviet Union and China, number one. Number two, you can't issue a wholesale criticism of the Torah without proposing specific alternatives such as what should have happened when the Industrial Revolution was going on. Does he really prefer that we all still lived in huts? So without anything like that, it's very easy to target the Torah and say, oh, it's them who did this. So I think it's weak, it's intellectually lazy, it's just bad all around.
Okay. Yeah, so obviously we're not going to, most of us who hold the Torah as dear to us are not going to say, okay, he's right, let's chuck the Torah, right? But what I want to focus on is our claims. Let's go through them one by one. So the first thing, Charlie. Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt. How can you blame the Torah? If he's going to blame anybody, he's got to blame God. Not the Torah.
I say he is blaming God. That's a fine point. He's saying God, assuming, you know, it's God's Torah. So yeah, it's his fault. The way that we perceive ourselves as our version of revelation is causing this. That's what he's arguing.
Is this like a stepping stone? Maybe he's thinking like he says, man, he doesn't say Jews and Jews accepted the Torah and other people, man didn't. So his name is like a stepping stone for the Jewish fact that everything is made for us, no?
I'm not sure what you mean by a stepping stone. I mean, I think he's blaming the Judeo-Christian tradition. I think that's his claim. So what I want to do is break down his claims one by one. And first, just in terms of the way he understands the creation story, and then in terms of its implications, even if he's right. So obviously, I don't think he's right. Let me tell you something. His solution is, well, there is a saint called Saint Francis who apparently would participate with nature and get the birds to praise God. And clearly, he did see beauty in nature in and of itself, and that's what we need to do. We need to have a patron saint of ecology. That's like his wonderful solution. But I want to question almost all of his claims. So let's go through them one by one, okay? Well, first, I think what we need to do is read through the Bereshit's depiction of the creation of man and sort of get and figure out, determine, is Bereshit saying that mankind is the most important creation, or that they're above the rest of nature, or that all the other creations were created solely for the purpose of serving mankind? So let's look at what the Torah actually has to say and break this down point by point. So Here I have the, basically, this is the sixth day of creation and the description of God's creating man. The Torah says as follows. So God says, let us make man in our image after our likeness. We could spend a long time, and we will, hopefully, discussing what exactly Salmenu and Mutenu are. What does it mean to be created with Selam Elokim, as the Torah is going to emphasize many times. It certainly sounds like something special and unique about humans. We're created with Selam Elokim, in the image or the shadow of God. So God says, let us make man in our image, the year do, bidigat hayam uva of hashamayim, and they will rule, that's how we'll translate the word the year do for now, they will rule over the fish of the sea, uva of hashamayim, and the birds of the heavens, uva vehema, and the animals, uva chal haaretz, and the entire land. And all the creepy, crawly creatures on the land. Right? So God says he's going to do it, and he keeps to his word, he does it. God creates man in his image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And God blesses them. By Yomer Lahem Elokim, and he says to them, Peru or Avu, be fruitful and multiply. Umil U et ha'aretz v'kiv shuha. Fill the land and conquer it. Uridu b'degat hayam uva ofa shamayim uva chol chaya harmetz ha'aretz. And rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the heavens and of the sky and all the animals that crawl on the land. And God says, I've given you all the grass on the land. And I've given you the trees, which have bear fruit. For them, that they shall be for you to eat. And the wild animals, and the birds of the heavens, the sky. All that crawls in the land, Ashabor Nevash Chaya, that has a living soul, I call Yarek Esalachla, by he came. So, what do we think? The Torah says, in our description of God creating man, at least this first description, this isn't the only description of God creating mankind, but God says he's going to make man in the image of God. That's something that Lynn White said, that humans are made in the image of God, that makes us special. And indeed, he says that they're going to rule over all of creation, everything in the land. And he tells them this. He says, go out, conquer the land, and rule over everything. Now, that certainly seems to indicate that there's something unique about mankind, and that mankind is meant to have some sort of control and governance over the world. So at this point, it's not, so you see where he's coming from. He's not making it out of thin air. But I'm not willing to make any conclusions yet about, you know, all of his assumptions, but there is basis in the Torah for suggesting that God is saying humans are different. Humans rule over the world. Yes, Paul.
The word R-O-U-R in English is a plural word. Who is R?
Nasa Adam Bit Salmenu. Great question. I want to get to that more in depth in another shiur, but there are many interpretations. Some say God's talking to the angels. Some say God partners with the earth such that man's body is in the image of the earth. Man's soul corresponds to God. There are a number of different interpretations of that. So, but let's go with either of those two. Either the angel.
He's not a Mrs. God.
Rabbi.
What'd you say?
He's not a Mrs. God.
Well, no, I don't think so. Not how I understand. Sorry to disappoint you, though. Yeah.
Rabbi, most of God's other names, they're all in plural. This our could be a majestic way of speaking.
Could be, for sure. Again, I don't want to focus on the hour for now. I want to focus on what he tells man to do.
Okay, may I just add one thing about what he's telling? Okay.
Yes.
There's no other way to the Torah was written for man. It wasn't really? Written for animals. It wasn't written for birds. It wasn't written for the creepy crawlers on the earth. It was written for man. So it has to be written in a way that shows that man is given that power to rule. Otherwise, who would be ruling the earth?
So Charlie essentially suggests that someone needs to rule. I think some people would say no. Who says who needs to rule? We're all equal. We're all equal. Everybody's the same. We're all part of nature. Let's all share the world together.
So we don't need a Torah.
Well, okay. So what I'm telling you is that I'm not saying it's a bad thing to say humans are in charge, but if the Torah is saying humans are in charge, let's own up to it. Then they are in charge.
So, the fact that God gave us the world to rule, it, he didn't give us the world to destroy it.
Okay, good, Daddy.
The Torah is based upon responsibility, freedom, responsibility. The Torah gives us guidelines of what to do in life. It's not Hefker. So if God starts out by saying, I want you to be like me, I want you to observe the laws that I'm going to set forth for you, it doesn't say anywhere here, God gave man free reign to destroy the earth any way they want. It says
the
ruler is supposed to rule correctly.
Beautiful. Okay, so we have to
figure out. How do you rule correctly? You use the Torah.
So Daddy, my father points out a number of things. One is he points out, I mean, I think what you're focused on mostly, Daddy, is that you're focused on the idea of rulership. What does it mean that God bestows upon man the responsibility to rule over the rest of the world? Now, I think we could already think of other stories that involve mankind's responsibility over the world and what happens when they don't keep that responsibility. And we'll get to that later, but that certainly needs to be defined. Certainly. So many of this is all, but you hear the point that certainly humans seem to be given a very special and unique role. So let's go, let's take a look. What I want to show is that there's different ways of looking at this, okay? So the first point I think you can wonder is, what about this notion that man is created last? Last in creation. The last thing that Hashem creates is Adam and Chava, humanity. So on the one hand, I think that Lynn White is arguing, and I think you could argue, and I think some do argue, that the reason that humans are created last is because it's all for us. God created everything, and then he creates humans, because the humans are the purpose of everything else. That is the argument of David Kimchi. And by the way, I don't think it's a unique argument, I just happened to pick him. But many Mefarshim argue that this is the reason man is created last. Take a look at source number 3. Olamalat Adam lechvodo baro ba'acharona. Because of man's greatness and for his honor, Hashem created man last. The hodia to tell, to inform us. Shekol nivra emata. And mata is an important word, by the way. But all the lower creations were created for him, the Samahu Adon al Kulam, and he appointed him as master over everything,
including Rabbi, a master over sulfur, a master over carbon dioxide,
yeah,
a master over coal, a master over all these things.
Yeah.
We are masters of everything, and he also gave us the tree of knowledge, which we ate from. And because of that knowledge, we know what to do with the coal. We know what to do with the sulfur. We know what to do with the uranium. We know what to do with everything that we have here.
Beautiful. So I'm going to keep the Eitz HaDaas out of it because that's very complicated. And we'll get to it hopefully in a few weeks or so. What exactly happened with the tree of knowledge, and what knowledge are we talking about? Were men created without any knowledge? And then all of a sudden we knew things, we ate from the tree of knowledge. But Charlie makes a great point, and I do think the Torah is expressing that, right? The notion of ruling over the world. I think, just based on our observation, you know, I haven't noticed any hotels or automobiles constructed by monkeys recently. Have you? Like, we do a lot with the world that no other creature seems to do. That certainly may be what the Torah is getting at when it talks about our governance over the world. But I want
if COVID-19 had been created at the time of creation, do you think mankind would have known how to deal with it?
No. We don't know how to deal with it now. Why do we know how to deal with it then?
No, we don't have all knowledge. We don't have control over
it. Okay, of course not. I don't think we have all the knowledge. I don't think this verse says we have all the knowledge. Certainly not. You don't have all the knowledge. But what it does say is that we have the capability and incredible power of gaining knowledge and using it in a way that other creatures don't. However, but back
well, to
the fact that man is last, I just want to get sort of past this creation of man at the end of creation, and then I'll take a few comments and questions. Look in source number 4, though. So that was the Radak. The Radak said, Radak came to be prominent Rishon, I believe 13th century England. Man created last because everything's for man. Mwahaha, the world is ours. However, that is not the only perspective here. If you look in the Midrash and Bereishit Rabbah and in the Gemara and Sanhedrin, you get a different perspective. Well, in the Gemara and Bereishit Rabbah, you get the opposite perspective. Take a look. Amar Rishon ben Lachish. So Rishon ben Lachish actually is commenting on a pasuk which says, Achor kedem sartani, where man says, you have created me last and first. And this reflects the notion we say actually Micha Dodi every Shabbat. We say Sof Ma'aseh B'Machshavat Chila. There's this notion in Chazal that, as it were, so to speak, God's first thought. If you can say such a thing about God, but I think the Torah does convey a certain thought process here. God's first thought was of man, but the last to actualize. Man is created last. And he says, Achor L'Ma'aseh Yom Ha'acharon V'kadam L'Ma'aseh Yom Rishon. At the end of the last day of creation and the very beginning of the first day of creation, before the first day, in God's thoughts. Why? Im Zacha Adam Omrim Lo Atza Kadam Filamalachi Asheret. If a person is successful, we tell him, you preceded the angels. V'im Lav, and if a person's not successful, Omrim Lo Zvov Kadamcha. The flies were before you. Yitosh kadamcha. The mosquitoes were before you. Shilshul zeh kadamcha. This filth in front of me was also before you. Says the Midrash, the fact that Adam is last is not for the kavod, not for honor. It's to show that you could be the most despicable. Everything else was before you. Don't get so ahead of yourself. Don't get so full of yourself. You're the last thing. We're last. We're in last place. Last in the race. Indeed, the Gemara in Sanhedrin has a number of ways of dealing with the notion that man is created on Erev Shabbat, right before that first Shabbat. Says the Gemara in Sanhedrin, source number 5. Tana Rabbanan, Adam Nivra B'Erev Shabbat. Man is created on the eve of Shabbat. Umipnei Ma, and why? So the first interesting answer, they didn't want the heretics to claim that God had a partner in creating, and therefore, you know, we're last, because we couldn't have created anything. Okay. Davar acher, another reason, shem tezuach daito alav. Again, if a person's mind gets ahead of him, is ruined, he gets haughty, we tell him, hey man, the mosquitoes were created before you. Don't get so haughty. So that we don't have to wait till Shabbat. That the minute God, man is created, right into Shabbat. So that we can enter into the feast right away. Mashal Melch Basar Vadam Shebanep Halterin Bishekh Lan Bekin Suda. This can be compared to a king that builds a palace and decorates it and prepares a feast. Ba'acharka Hichnis Orchin, and then brings in the guests. So you had two diametrically opposed ideas here about man being created last. One idea is that we say even the mosquitoes were created before the man. The lowliest creatures were first. And at the same time, the other perspective is God built this beautiful palace and a feast, and he invited us and we're his guests to enjoy it. And they're both true. They're both true simultaneously, and we have to work them both out. So my first point is that we get two perspectives in the sort of, you know, range of Jewish thought. It's not so simple that we're just saying, yay, mankind, we can do whatever we want. No, quite the opposite. Some are saying that specifically don't get too haughty because you're last. Okay, we'll pause for any comments or questions at this point. Any thoughts they want to share? Okay, so now let's, for the next few minutes, focus on this notion of ruling over nature, v'yirdu. What does it mean to rule? Now, there are different types of rulers, aren't there? You know, we have elected rulers. We have monarchs. There's governance by force. And then there's democracy. And when you rule, you could be a tyrant, or you could be, you know, a benevolent dictator, or you could be just all for the people. What sort of ruler does the Torah want man to be? Again, there are different perspectives here. It is not so simple. So the Radak, again, in his view, the message of Torah is that humans are the centerpiece. And he says the same thing here. Bir yedu bidigat hayam. Lehodia, he called nivrim atlo nivril bavor adam, again, to show that everything was created for mankind. Bishayyehu bisichlo. Right? And he, with his intellect, Melech Umoshel Aleihem, should be the king and ruler over them. But he gives an important reason. Shem lo kein lo haya ba'olam hashafel mi sheyakir mi bra'o. If it weren't for that, no one would know who created him. Humans are given the unique capability of recognizing God. And that's why we have this unique authority to rule over the rest of creation. So now he addresses, interestingly, why biyirdu in the plural? Who is the group ruling over the rest of creation? One is because it's male and female. Also because we have authority over the rest of creation with two parts of ourselves. With our intellect to think about how to rule over them. Also with our actions, as Charlie described, because man with the actions that we're capable of doing, as inspired by our intellectual curiosity, we can create all sorts of wondrous creations and technology in order to control the rest of creation. But indeed, Rav David Kimchi, he's not exactly describing, you know, how we should treat the environment, but he certainly is saying that humans, because of our unique elevated status and our ability to recognize God in the world, we're given the authority to rule over the rest of creation and to use our thoughts to know and intellect to figure out how exactly to do that. He's looking at the Yirdu as a monarch would rule over their nation. So that's one way of looking at it. However, it's not so simple. And I think, first of all, it's something that's kind of strange. Do we really look at man's role as being here to rule over the rest of creation? First of all, it doesn't seem that that's our purpose. And second of all, do we rule over the wild animals? Well, kind of, sort of. You know, I guess when we're attacked, we put them in our zoos sometimes, but like I don't come into contact with too many wild animals on a daily basis. Am I missing something? And if I do bump into a wild animal in the forest, I usually run the other way. And I don't start quoting Barry said, hey, I rule over you. I am the king. So there's something interesting about claiming that, yes, humans rule over the rest of creation.
Rabbi, we are ruling over the animals, even though we don't see them, just by having a gun.
Okay, so you're pointing out that we have, again, I think that's what the Radak is saying, certainly, that we have a greater capability than they do. But I wouldn't say that that means we rule over them. It means maybe be more powerful than them. You know, we're stronger, but that doesn't necessarily mean we rule over them. In the classic sense of ruling. And indeed, in fact, you could argue that we don't actually play this role. The Midrash in Bereishit Rabba says as follows: Uridu b'digat hayam, Amar Rabbi Chanina im zachu redu v'im lab yerdu. So the Bereishit Rabba is commenting on the fact that God actually changes the word, describing the human relationship with the rest of nature, from his thought process to what he tells us. What he tells us is urid. What he thinks, what he says out loud before creating man is uridu. But what he says after is veyirdu, with a yud. The Midrash says as follows: if we're successful, ridu, we rule. Ve'imlav, yerdu, we go down. But yerdu, meaning we're going to descend with the rest of them. We'll be just like all the other animals if we are not, quote-unquote, successful. Am Rabbi Yako de Kfar Chanin, ad shehu b'tzalmenu kin metenu uridu. Those who are acting like humans created in the image of God, they rule. At she'eno b'tzalmenu kin metenu yerdu. Those who do not act according to their potential, those who do not act as if they were created in the image of God, they will fall. They will go downward. What the Midrash is saying here is this number, whatever this rulership is, it's not absolute. It's not definitive. You need to act a certain way in order to have that respect and authority. So that's number one. It's not unconditional, necessarily. And number two is we could ask ourselves, well, what type of rulership are we talking about? As my father suggested before, it doesn't necessarily mean that we get to just chuck the whole world out at our disposal and abuse God, the beautiful world that God created. And let me point out something else here. If it was really true that we are tyrants over the rest of the creations, then we should be told very clearly that we could do whatever we want with them. And we should probably be able to hunt them, shouldn't we? If we rule over the animals, we should be able to kill them for meat at our leisure. However, Chazal tell us a different story. If you look in source number 8, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Gemara actually says we did not have that right. And it's based on the notion that if you look in the Pesukim, actually, we'll take a look back here in Bereishit, it actually says that we get to eat the grass, and we get to eat everything that grows, and we get to eat it, and the animals get to eat it as well. Sounds like we're on the same playing field. To which the Gemara says as follows. This is in source number 8. Amrim Yud Amarav, Adam Harishon lo hutar lo basar la'achila. Adam the first, was not permitted to eat meat. Diktiv lachem yelach lo v'chol chayat ha'aretz. For you, the grass and vegetation will be to eat, and for the wild animals. V'lo chayat ha'aretz lachem. And the wild animals are not for you. The grass is for you and the wild animals, but the wild animals are not for you. Adam couldn't eat meat. And the Gemara says, and when the sons of Noah came out of the Teva, then God permitted them to eat meat. And we can talk about why that was. because it says he gave them wild animals like grass. And the Gemara asks, you still with me? I hope so. Misvei, uredu begat hayam. Wait, I don't get it. Didn't God say we get to rule over all the animals? Doesn't ruling mean we could kill them at our leisure? Doesn't it mean we could do whatever we want? Not so fast. Lava chila? No, the malacha. No, it doesn't mean that we get to rule over them and kill them. It means we get to work with them. To work with them. It's not clear that we get to dominate everything in the world as we choose to enjoy our greatest fantasies. In fact, we might actually be charged with controlling the world for the world's benefit. When you appoint a CEO over a company, it doesn't mean the CEO gets to go around and telling people what to do because they want to. The point of the CEO is to run the company so the company functions appropriately. And that might very well be what the purpose of our rulership is. It's not to go around messing things up. And Rav Hirsch makes this point in terms of defining the word uridu. And he has an interesting linguistic point here in source number 9. He says there's different ways not sure what the grammatical term is for a second, but there are different ways of describing the object of rulership. Different pronouns. You could say lerdot bum or lerdot otam. Lerdot otam means to rule a constituency. Lerdot bum means something different. Says a person, source number 9. Af tafkido shel adam lerbot bum below lerdot otam. That the position of humans is to rule with them, not to rule over them. Allah hafil et shiltono b'chol balei achayim v'hem v'aretz atzma v'vo'o l'kayim et hafkido k'adam yishlol mehem mitzat mechirutam v'im yedo chalaki. That our man is this position toward all living things on earth. It is not his destiny to make all of them completely submissive. The earth and its creatures may still have relationships that are drawn from us in which they are ends in themselves. Only he has determination, lerdot bam, not otam, to exercise his dominion among all living beings over them and the earth itself, to bring them partially into his hand for the fulfillment of his human task from their free independence. If man steps up to the earth world as a man in the image and shadow of God and only demands their service in the service of God, the earth world gladly recognizes him as its ruler. His rule itself is not servitude and humiliation, rather an exaltation of all earthly beings in the circle of free moral divine purposes. Mainly, God created the world for a purpose. Everything. There is a greater goal of creation. Humans are charged with using the world to help accomplish that purpose, and that's good for them because that's why they're here. But it's not for us necessarily. It's for serving God. That's the point of the rulership. You know, it's like it's a CEO, not a monarch who dominates. The whole world willingly bows to the pure God-serving man. But if a person abuses his position, he does not appear as Adam, as governor of God, but in his own glory of power over the world, then the animal does not willingly bow his neck. Says Rav Hirsch, if you misuse the power, then it will not be man ruling over the rest of the world. Then it might be a struggle. And again, I am not sure whether or not we still get to rule over all of nature. We certainly do use nature for our purposes, but I wouldn't say that they bow before us. And maybe we never actually merited this. But again, the point isn't that we get to just do what we want with the world. And finally, and this is the last point I'll make before I let you go for today, there's the other point. One big argument that Lynn White makes is that the Torah essentially says humans are above nature, that we're not part of the natural world around us. We're separate from it. We look at it as objects, and we are the subject. And that's what leads to all of this pollution and decay, because we just get to do whatever we want, and we don't think of the world as inherently significant. And I ask you, is it so clear from the creation story that humans are separate? And I think the answer is ultimately we are both a part of the natural world and also separate and above the natural world. They're true simultaneously. But I'll leave you with two interesting points. Point one is Radak again, who is sort of championing this perspective that humans are the purpose of all creation. So he comments on the fact that we're called Adam. Why are we called Adam? What word does Adam sound like in Hebrew? What's Adam? Comes from the word Adam, Adama. Adama is the ground. Says Radak, well, that's kind of interesting. Vekara oto Adam, Adam hu lakuach meha Adama. Imkem lam nikrishmo Adam ki gama chayim acherim hemi Adama. It says in the Torah, at least the way the Torah describes it, all creations, all living things are from the ground, or at least all animals. Elorato lahavdilo bishmo mishar balei achayim. God wanted to distinguish man from the other animals. Kemosha hu mudal mehem beruach hu guf. Just as he is separate from them in body and spirit. You don't have to say that the other animals come from the ground. Of course they do. But man whose spirit comes from above. To separate man from the creatures above, the angels, and from God himself, he calls us Adam. Our body is from the ground. Says the Radak, Adam, Adama, is because we're in the middle. We're not like human. We're not like angels. We're not like animals. We're different than the animals. We have a ruach, which would suggest that we are not connected to this world, but we live in this world, and therefore we're called Adama. So again, sort of the separatist perspective. That's the perspective that the Radak is arguing here. But you have a different perspective, and I'll put it to you this way. We spoke at length in the first shiurim about the notion of different days of creation. And we've argued, look, God, whether they're chronological or not, that was last year, either way, God certainly had the power to create the world in 1 second. Why do we have different days? And I think the basic argument is that every day is a different type of creation to sort of separate between them, to create an order and a variance of different things. They're not all the same. And isn't it interesting that humans don't have our own day? There isn't a special day for humans. We're created on the same day as the rest of the animals. Why? Says Don Isaac of Abarbanel, I'll tell you why. Ulachin kedele zarzo baro biyom echad imshar habal chayim yoshvim bitzilam ruham. Therefore, in order to warn him, he created him one day with the rest of the beasts, sitting with them and their spirit in inferiority and extinction. You're just with the rest of the animals. Shelo yachshov gruim him imenu b'tiveim, so that man shouldn't think that they're worse than him by their nature. Ki kamot zeh. Cain motzad, just like the animals die, humans die. Beruach echad chiyuni lehem, they all have one living spirit. Umotar ha'adam min ha'behema ayin be'inyan ha'guf. The advantage of humans over animals is nothing in terms of our bodies. Ki akol havel, according to that pasuk, everything is fleeting, nothing. Nothing physical lasts forever. Humans are animals. Our distinction is based on our intellectual capacity. Therefore, God, in order to distance ourselves from physical animalistic tendencies and to encourage us to cling to our seichel, our intellect, because through the seichel, a person is kona, acquires an end and a name for his soul. If he doesn't do it, he'll be the same as the animals, just as we were all created on the same day. There's two ways to look at the creation story and man's relationship to the rest of nature. Yes, we're unique, but we're also created on the same day as animals. We don't have our own day. We do share commonality with animals. As we know, we have many physical similarities with animals. And so I leave you with the following thought, because I want people to have a chance to join my Tertulian share in just a few minutes. And that is as follows. There are some who want to argue, and I think that's what sort of Lynn White's saying. Hey, you humans, why you think you're so special? You're just like everything else. Why do you think you're above nature? Why do you think you get to make these factories with smoke going up to the sky, ruining the world and ruining the air around us? Shame on you. Why is the Torah saying that humans are different? That's the attack. And I have two responses to that. Number one is that the Torah is not saying that we get to pollute the world as we choose. Certainly it is pointing out the significance and uniqueness of mankind and the unique powers God bestowed us with. And we do have a certain responsibility toward the rest of the world, and we do even get to use the world to accomplish a greater purpose. As you know, we do chop down wood. We do use animals to work for us. That's all true. But at the same time, the Torah recognizes that we're not all that different. And we have to make it our business to accentuate our uniqueness. And I ask you as follows, are we really doing the world a favor if we simply say we're just like all the animals around us? Are we really doing the world a favor if we don't focus on the Tzelem Elokim? If we don't focus on the capabilities God gave us? Does that make sense? Doesn't it make sense for the Torah specifically to accentuate the uniqueness of humanity so that we live a dignified life, so that we don't spend our entire day going from pleasure to pleasure? I think so. And I would argue that if we just sort of let the world run itself and retreat it into nature, that would, although maybe in certain senses it would be better in terms of reducing pollution, it certainly would be betraying the uniqueness of mankind. And so I think it's a much more complex perspective than Lynn White is arguing. So sort of to do a brief recap of what we saw, Lynn White makes a few claims. He claims that the Torah explicitly is the word he uses, says that God created everything for mankind to do what he sees fit. And I'm arguing with that notion on a number of levels. First of all, nothing's explicit. What's explicit is that humans are given Tzelem Elokim, and God says we have to quote-unquote rule or govern the rest of humanity. It does not say that we get to do whatever we want. And we noted that it's not so clear that the fact that we're created last means we're better than everyone else. It might mean that exactly the opposite. And we also noted this notion of ruling over the rest of the world is not by force and dominance and getting, you know, with a stick and a sword, but it's a sort of governance of the rest of the world for accomplishing our purpose of serving God. And finally, this notion that humans stand out above nature is more complex than that. It's true that we do, but it's also true that we don't. And that's one of the big conflicts that humans face. To what degree do we look at the rest of the world and participate in it and engage in it? And to what degree do we say, no, we're different? And that's something I want to focus on next time, based on Rabbi Soloveitchik's beautiful depiction of the second depiction of man's creation, because man is created a number of times in the Torah to portray different aspects of humanity. And you can't even make conclusions on just two verses alone. So with that, we will pick up next time. Thank you, everyone, for joining. I'm sorry for the breakup before. And I have a few minutes in case anyone has any questions.